WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. On a day when President Biden said something no other president has ever said, that if China invades Taiwan, the U.S. would defend Taiwan militarily. And that comes after Pentagon spokesman John Kirby kept open the possibility this weekend that the U.S. will send troops to Ukraine. Troops, not just money and equipment, troops, but specifically to guard the U.S. embassy in Kyiv, which reopened last week. This is the first weekday morning on which members of New York's congressional delegation are campaigning in the Democratic primary with the new redistricting maps that were finalized early on Saturday. We'll talk later this hour about your current members of Congress who now look like they'll be running against each other, Gerald Nadler against Carolyn Maloney, Sean Patrick Maloney, maybe against Mondaire Jones, maybe others too, and Bill de Blasio has officially entered a congressional primary now. We'll sort all that out. And it's a day after a new CBS News YouGov poll came out with some very interesting findings for here in the middle of primary season. For example, if you didn't already think Democrats and Republicans have different priorities, the top three things Democrats want their nominees to focus on are inflation, taxing the wealthy, and racial justice. The top three things Republicans want their nominees to focus on are inflation, that one's the same, stopping illegal immigration, and talking about traditional values. So again, the one thing they agree on there, inflation is concern number one. And interestingly, the parties are basically tied when it comes to who would be more effective at dealing with inflation, right about 50-50 on which party would be better at that. And that goes against an assumption that inflation concerns give Republicans an electoral advantage that we seem to hear a lot in the media. The CBS News YouGov poll also finds that there seems to be more passion about abortion policy among Democrats than Republicans right now. 83% of Democrats said they want their nominees to focus on defending abortion rights. Just 59% of Republicans said they want their nominees to focus on opposing abortion rights. And there's this. With this poll conducted just after the white nationalist mass killing in Buffalo, people were asked how important it is for political leaders to condemn white nationalism. 75% of Democrats said very important. Only 23% of Republicans said it's very important for political leaders to condemn white nationalism. On CBS Face the Nation yesterday, Republican Senator Rick Scott of Florida, head of the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, was asked about that and whether he thinks it's important for Republican Senate candidates to condemn white supremacy. The question was about white supremacy. Scott winds up condemning government forms designed to help reach more equality.
Well, clearly we ought to all condemn any hatred. We ought to condemn any white supremacy. We've got to figure out how to come together. I believe we've got to stop all this racial politics. The plan I put out at rescueamerica.com, I said we ought to stop asking people on government forms for their skin color.
A pivot from a response to the white nationalist massacre in Buffalo to the white grievance talking point of condemning government forms intended to promote equality in less than 20 seconds. With me now, USA Today Washington Bureau Chief Susan Page. She is also author of the book, Madam Speaker, Nancy Pelosi and the Lessons of Power, which is just out in paperback. Also, her previous book, The Matriarch, Barbara Bush and the Making of an American Dynasty. and she's now working on one about TV journalist Barbara Walters. Hi, Susan. Thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. It's great to be back with you.
So much to talk about today on domestic politics and foreign affairs alike. Let me start with the finding from the CBS YouGov poll showing the vast discrepancy between the parties on how important it is for political leaders to condemn white supremacy. As I said, 3/4 of Democrats, only 1/4 of Republicans saying it's very important. And maybe we heard that reflected in how Rick Scott couldn't answer the question with a simple yes. Do you think Buffalo and its context could matter to the outcome of who controls Congress this year?
Well, I think probably not. I think on this issue, minds are pretty well made up. At this point in May of an election year, you're looking for issues that might really change things, shake things up. And despite the gravity of what happened in Buffalo, I think it is unlikely to change the train that we see coming down the track for November.
And what do you make of the findings that 23% of Republicans think it's very important to condemn white supremacy? Only 23% said very important, compared to 75% of Democrats.
And look at the other side of that question. Half of Republicans say it is not very or not at all important for political leaders to condemn white nationalism. That means Republican candidates are in a very safe place with their base voters if they do what you just heard Senator Scott do, which is take a question about white nationalism and make it an attack on efforts to address racial disparities. That tells you, that poll finding tells you why Republicans are able to do that without penalty, at least within their own party.
And what about abortion rights? You wrote an article in USA Today not long ago about abortion rights as a midterm elections issue and how much it might or might not matter after the pending Supreme Court decision following the Alito draft. Were you taking a wait-and-see approach on that, I think?
I was. I mean, the leak of the draft Supreme Court decision was really a seismic political event. But Democrats who hope it transforms the election, the midterm election, I think we're increasingly seeing that that's not happening. I mean, you mentioned the issues that Democrats care most about from this CBS News poll. And, you know, defending abortion rights ranks 4th. So that tells you this is not an issue that is able to overwhelm people's concerns about on other fronts, on things such as inflation, even though on this issue, Democrats are very much aligned with where public opinion is. In this poll and others, by almost 2-1, Americans say they do not want to see the Roe v. Wade decision overturned. And that is what we expect to happen, perhaps as soon as the end of next month.
And we will see, of course, if it winds up increasing Democratic turnout, because even at number 4 on the list, that's still an important issue and might motivate some people who would not otherwise have voted. Depending on this Supreme Court decision in its final form to actually show up in November, that remains to be seen. Go ahead, Susan.
If I could just interrupt for a moment, pardon me for interrupting. There's another way in which abortion may become more powerful as we get toward November, and that's because whenever the Supreme Court decision comes down, if it overturns Roe v. Wade, as the draft decision did, there are more than a dozen states that have enacted trigger laws that will immediately restrict abortion in some very serious ways. And we have other states, 9 states, I think, that have laws that existed before Roe v. Wade was handed down in 1973 that could go immediately back into effect. So it may not be one of those issues where you have to wait down the road to see the impact. We'll see the impact on abortion, access to abortion across the country instantly. And that's something that might make this issue more powerful again.
And I saw that the Republican governor of Arkansas was on one of the Sunday talk shows saying how they might revisit the trigger law if, in fact, Roe versus Wade is reversed and the trigger law in that state takes effect, because the current trigger law in Arkansas would not even allow exceptions for rape or incest. And the Republican governor there was saying, yeah, well, we may have to go back and look at that a little bit. And so that's that's how extreme some of these things are and how much it's going to scramble politics at the state level potentially if this happens, right?
And that's right. And actually, some Republicans are a little nervous about these trigger laws that have no exception for rape or incest. Some of them don't have an exception for life of the mother. But, you know, at the same time, the governor of Arkansas was being a little bit queasy about the lack of exceptions. On another Sunday show, the governor of Mississippi refused to rule out the idea of moving on to ban certain forms of contraception. Whoa. If we get Roe v. Wade decision overturned.
Listeners, Democrats or Republicans, what do you want the candidates from your party to be running on primarily this election season? 212-433-WNYC. This is New York, New York area, so we have mostly Democrats. For you Democrats, is it inflation, number one, then taxing the wealthy and racial justice, two and three, as the CBS YouGov poll found, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, Democrats and Republicans, is it inflation, then illegal immigration and traditional values, as the poll found? If so, what does traditional values mean to you in 2022? Is it respecting the results of election returns, stare decisis, maybe not those, returning LGBTQ people or their children to the closet? What traditional values are important for your party to support, if that's high on your list? 212-433-WNYC. Or do you want the U.S. to defend Taiwan militarily, any of you, if China were to invade it? Did President Biden make a dangerous mistake when he became the first president today to ever say we would? 212-433-WNYC. Or any questions for Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today? You can also tweet a comment or a question at Brian Lehrer. Let's go back to these poll findings and what they suggest. Democrats and Republicans alike list inflation as their top concern. We'll get to inflation, Susan. But then they diverge, with Republicans citing illegal immigration and traditional values as their next two top concerns, while Democrats cite taxing the wealthy and racial justice. Is it unusual for people in the parties to have even one of their top three concerns be the same as they do with inflation now?
Yeah, it is. We've had some polls where you could have taken the top three or four or five issues in the two parties, and there is zero overlap. But now if you do a Venn diagram of what people in both parties care about, and independents as well, there's really one answer, and that is inflation. And it's inflation of food, and it's inflation most particularly of gas prices. That is what is the biggest headache for the White House now. And of course, gas prices not really under their control, so they were looking with some alarm at the continued high price people are paying for gas.
And this poll finds a tie, basically, for which party people see as better to deal effectively with inflation. 51-49 Republicans, so with a margin of error, a tie, 51-49. Does that surprise you? It seems to me that the political media coverage of this usually makes it out to be that the issue favors Republicans significantly without necessarily examining policy differences very closely.
Well, of course, we often blather on without looking closely at the nuances, but I would say this is a misleading poll finding. And that's because in a midterm elections often, usually, traditionally, are a referendum on the party in power. So when people say inflation is my top concern, even if they split 50-50 on which party will handle it better, they already know they think the Democrats are handling it poorly. So I think this is an issue that is bad for Democrats. I think it feeds this perception. They ask, are things going well or badly for the United States? 74% of Americans said things are going badly in the United States. That is a terrible finding and a great concern to the party in power, which at the moment are the Democrats.
Kate in Scarborough, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kate.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. You asked the question about what people care about and will vote about in November. And as a woman, I'd just like to say that being able to control my own body is going to be topic number one for me. So I will be supporting those Democrats who came out and are coming out strongly in support of abortion rights.
Gotcha, Kate. Just curious, what would be number two if you have one?
For me, number two, honestly, is in terms of keeping climate change and global warming on the agenda. It seems to be that our storms are getting worse. We have flooding in our neighborhood that has an impact on my life. I'm lucky that I can work from home. Gas prices aren't that bad for me in terms of commuting costs, but fear of storms, loss of electricity, things like that are up there. And so I care about those issues because I do see them connected to me being able to work from home.
Kate,
but I do want to mention one thing about your caller talked about gas prices being something people see every day driving up and down the street have an impact on their vote. In my opinion, any woman between the ages of 13 and 50, in terms of wondering every month if she's going to get her period or not, cares about reproductive health care and having access to health care for all their body parts. And so it may be an issue that the Supreme Court will rule on, bring to the fore. These trigger laws in states will take effect. That will bring the issue to the fore. But being able to plan your own family life and control your own body, I just don't see why that's dismissed as a political concern.
Kate, thank you very much. And Susan, to her point, just because something comes in fourth as a priority for Democrats in these polls, even assuming the poll is an accurate reflection, that doesn't mean that's not high on the list because people think about more than one issue at a time.
Yes, that's right. And this is obviously an issue that for the past half century, supporters of abortion rights have felt protected by the existence of the Roe v. Wade decisions, even as some rights were chipped away. That has changed in this election for the first time since the 1970s. So we may see it be a big spur to turnout and an issue that really resonates with voters who didn't previously think that was something they needed to worry about because they had this Supreme Court decision on their side.
Michelle in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michelle. Michelle, is that you? Do we have a Michelle in Brooklyn with us? I wonder if I have your name wrong. All right, we'll try to come back to you. Let me ask you, Susan, about this number two finding. Let me get back to this in my notes, too. This number two finding on the Democratic priority list, right behind inflation, is taxing the wealthy. Do we see Democrats nationally running for Congress on any specific taxing the wealthy proposals?
Well, Bernie Sanders has some ideas, and Elizabeth Warren on taxing wealth instead of income. And they have made this, a fundamental part of their appeal for years. Bernie Sanders has been talking about this for decades. And there are some proposals in Congress to do this. I think there are low expectations, I think, for big things getting done in Congress the rest of this year. That's not impossible. Democrats are still hopeful they can use the reconciliation process to get something big done. But as you know, they've had trouble fashioning a proposal that can appeal to both Bernie Sanders and to Joe Manchin. And that's what any proposal needs to do to even get much of a hearing on Capitol Hill.
Republican Senate campaign head Rick Scott, who we played that clip of before, kind of equating government forms tracking racial inequality as being as bad as white nationalism as a problem to be dealt with. He has this whole blueprint, as you know, for Republican candidates to run on with some pretty extreme things like raising taxes on lower income Americans as not paying their fair share and ending Medicaid and Medicare. Apparently, many candidates are not taking him up on running on his blueprint on the Republican side. Is Rick Scott out there exposed now as too extreme even for his own party's candidates who he's supposed to be leading the charge of?
Rick Scott is now out there exposed as a presidential candidate for 2024.
Uh-huh.
That's what his proposal was all about. It was staking a claim to some very conservative territory for the presidential bid he wants to make. He did this without the backing of other Republican senators. There is Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, outraged by Scott's plan, which had controversial proposals, including the ones you just mentioned. And Democrats delighted. You see Joe Biden increasingly talk about the particulars of Rick Scott's proposal as though it's something the whole party has endorsed.
He's going to run for president on raising taxes on lower income Americans. Isn't there experience with that recently when in 2012, Mitt Romney, as the Republican nominee against Barack Obama, kind of got caught on tape saying to some supporters something about the 47% of Americans who, because they have such low incomes, don't pay any federal income tax, that was a problem. And that seemed to land him in very bad stead with a lot of ordinary voters.
Yeah, you'd think that would have been a lesson learned. But one lesson from the leading Republican candidate for the Republican nomination next time around, Donald Trump, is that you can hold positions that seem outrageous or untraditional or at odds with where Republicans have been for generations and still succeed. I mean, there's a message of disruption from Donald Trump that I think Republican contenders have learned.
Is there any Democratic equivalent to the Scott blueprint? That is there a set of Democratic platform plans that are geared towards swing districts or across the board for their congressional candidates to run on this fall?
Well, they've really struggled with this. You know, you have members of the squad, including one very prominent one in your listening area there in New York, who have outlined proposals on a Green New Deal and on taxing the wealthy and on other proposals that create real heartburn in the swing districts, where Democratic candidates very much do not want to talk about defund the police or the Green New Deal. And it's fractured the party in a way that isn't helpful. I think it is fair to say the Democrats do not have a consistent nationwide message that they're taking to voters. You see candidates running in their individual districts with messages that are quite different from one another.
Michelle in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Now I think we have you, Michelle. Hi there.
Hi there. How are you, Brian? Hi. I have a mixed bag here, okay? For the, generally, I would say white supremacy, but it also indicates and would include crime in the city and everything else that's going on, because I think it's a mixed bag. I would love to see something done with the subways, a little maybe even metal detectors, something to protect us better. So that would all be included in what I call hate. Just hate America, which has got to stop. I also think taxing the wealthy also is included in the unfortunate housing situation in our cities, that we have to start really creating more middle class housing and housing for the mentally ill and everything else, because this is really a terrible way. The increases in rents are outrageous. I have a friend that wants to move out of New York because she can't afford these $70. A friend of mine told me that they raised their rents by 70%. This is ridiculous. And then finally, the other topic, which was, what was the other thing? So I combined everything, that's why. But
that's a lot. That's good. Michelle, thank you very much. So she listed mostly local New York City priorities. You know, we're talking about congressional races. But what about crime? Which, you know, Michelle was positioning herself as a Democratic voter who agrees with the Democratic priority list that was cited in the poll, but also crime should be added. Is crime breaking out as a national issue?
Yes, I think crime, as you know, we have seen the metrics of crime increasing, violent crimes increasing, and concern about crime should not be in conflict with racial justice. But some candidates portray it that way. And there's no issue Republicans like to talk about more. There's no phrase that Republicans would want to repeat more in a political campaign than defund the police, because that is a phrase that makes some voters, including some swing voters, worried about their safety, worried about the commitment to fighting crime. And it has affected, I think, the potency of the racial justice message that was so powerful, so far-reaching in the wake of George Floyd's murder.
No Democrats in swing districts, maybe no Democrats at all, but certainly no Democrats in swing districts are running on defund the police. Is there a Democratic approach to crime, to the concerns about crime that people have in swing districts?
Yeah, some of them talk about reform the police. They don't abandon the idea of addressing police practices entirely. But this is, you know, there are issues that help one party over the other. Crime is an issue that very much benefits Republicans, not Democrats. Just like if their focus is on abortion, that's an issue that would really favor Democrats over Republicans. Crime is both a rising concern across the country and a big worry for Democratic candidates.
Here's an interesting question from a listener via Twitter. Listener writes, please distinguish if poll respondents are prioritizing the issues they want their party to focus on for themselves or messaging for others. And that's a really interesting question, because I guess when the CBS News YouGov poll asks people who are identifying themselves as Democrats or identifying themselves as Republicans, what issues are most important to you for your candidates to be prioritizing? I guess it could be taken either way, right? Either as what's important to you as an individual, or if you want your party to win, what do you think they should be out there emphasizing?
So that is interesting. So everybody is a strategist now, a nation of pundits. This would be very bad news in my view, if everyone is trying to strategize, because what you really want to get at polls is what are people thinking about themselves. And I think generally when we do these surveys and call back and talk to respondents, they are not making three-step calculations for their answer. They are talking about their own lives. But that is an interesting tweet.
Well, continue in a minute. We'll finish up with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. And we're going to turn to the foreign affairs news from this morning. Breaking news with President Biden becoming the first U.S. president ever to say we will respond militarily if China invades Taiwan, which China is making more noises about doing recently. So let's see what that's all about. Did Biden just make one big gaffe like he did recently when he said they should get rid of Putin? Was he really looking for regime change in Moscow? He said no. He had to walk that one back. Is that happening again now with China while the president is on an Asia trip of all things? So we'll tackle that with Susan Page right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. A few more minutes with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Big news from President Biden this morning, but I want you to tell us, Susan, if this is a Biden gaffe or something that he planned. The U.S. usually does not say if we would respond with military force if China were to ever invade Taiwan, but when a reporter asked Biden that question today, he said this.
As a commitment we made, we are not. Look, here's the situation. We agree with a one China policy. We signed on to it and all the attendant agreements made from there. But the idea that it could be taken by force, just taken by force, is just not appropriate. It'll dislocate the entire region.
And so the newsy part of that was really at the very beginning, and he almost kind of swallowed it. He said, yes, that's a commitment we made. Did the president know what he was doing there?
You know, if this is a gaffe, it's the third time he's done it in the last couple months.
Oh.
On two previous occasions, the White House has come out scrambled after he answered the question in almost the same way to say he was not signaling a change in policy. I think there becomes a point where you take the president at his word. I think this must be what Joe Biden believes and the response that he plans to take. He is inaccurate in saying that is a commitment we have made. Our commitment to Taiwan does not guarantee that we will respond with military action if China invades. It has never been that clear. clear. It is deliberately murky. But President Biden has been pretty clear on that now for the third time. And so whatever his aides come out and say, you know, on background to reporters who are writing stories, I think this must be what he believes and what he plans to do. And you know, just to be clear, our commitment to Taiwan is not like our commitment to NATO or to South Korea or to Japan. It is a lesser commitment that has that has been a matter of strategic ambiguity for presidents in the past.
So much for strategic ambiguity. Remind us why the U.S. even has any kind of commitment to protect Taiwan. I know you said he misspoke there in saying that there is a commitment to deploy troops, but why is this our business, even if we condemn it, to put American lives at risk, according to the president or anyone else?
Well, we oppose the communist, the rise of communism in China. And although we've now recognized one China since the Nixon administration, we support Taiwan as a democracy in an important region of the world.
What was the context for the president saying that this morning? Where was he?
Well, he's in Tokyo on his trip to Asia. And he was asked the question in contrasting with his decision not to send U.S. military forces to fight in Ukraine, although we're sending a ton of military equipment. We're not sending forces there. So the reporter was asking if what applied in Ukraine applied in Taiwan. But he made that unqualified. He made that without a hedge. He answered, yes, we would respond militarily in Taiwan.
And the Pentagon spokesman, John Kirby, this weekend kept the door open to the U.S. sending troops to Ukraine after all, but only for the specific purpose of guarding the U.S. embassy in Kyiv, which reopened last week. Why did the embassy reopen despite the ongoing Russian assault on the country?
Well, it's a statement that the Ukrainians have done something we thought would not be possible, which is repel to some degree this Russian invasion, to prevent the takeover of their capital. And some other Western embassies had reopened in there. So there was pressure on the United States to do the same in a show of solidarity and support. But doing this does raise the risk of an incident, deliberate or not, that will put U.S. military forces against Russian military forces. And that's something that is a real danger in this world.
Did the Pentagon spokesman or anyone else say what would precipitate the U.S. sending troops to guard the embassy rather than the State Department's own security team, which guards it now?
Well, the stories from Tokyo, where I am not, say that the diplomatic service is now protecting the embassy, but usually there are Marines, a Marine detachment protecting embassies. They're talking about returning a Marine detachment. And then also this additional step of dispatching special forces because of the great danger from the fighting that's going on in Ukraine now.
I guess we could say that the troops, if deployed, would be sitting ducks for Russian missile attacks. I can imagine a cycle of escalation where Russia bombs them to thumb its nose at the U.S. inside Ukraine, then the U.S. feels it needs to respond, and we're off to the races in a way our two countries avoided for the 40 years of the Cold War. But then again, I guess they could do that anyway if they wanted to bomb the U.S. embassy, even if we don't deploy troops there first.
Yes, that's exactly the conundrum for policymakers. You have described it well, Brian.
Conundrums are us, and so we leave it there. With Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today and author of the book, now out in paperback, Madam Speaker, Nancy Pelosi and the Lessons of Power. Thanks, Susan, as always. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Brian.